Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be here another week. I always say that literally as we get older. But anyhow, I hope you're all doing great out there, whether you're listening live or on a replay. We started doing these, oh my gosh, over 11 and a half years ago. And nowadays, it's just a different world out there. And today, I am really excited that we are bringing in Len Pagan. He is with Nations Lending. He's been in this industry for eons, basically, really, like since the early, about 2004. I'll let him tell you more of that when we get started. But today, we're in such a different environment. Mortgage loans are similar to what they were years ago, but many, many differences. Things have changed, especially since we had the Dodd-Frank and changes after 2008. A lot of changes came in the next 3 years. So we're just going to kind of go over a lot today, but actually tune in because getting these loans may be easier than you think. There's been some changes, which we'll talk about at the end too, that have happened that help everyone get in right now when there were times it was a lot tougher. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome Len Pagan. Hey, Len.
Hey, Natalie. Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. I'm really great to hear from you. Yeah. Yeah. So tell us, before we get started and dig in, because this time is going to fly by, dig in about all the changes and things that have actually helped a lot of people now, even though we have higher rates, there's a way to go down. Tell us your history and what you got you into the business. So we'll go back a little bit.
Sure, yeah. So I have been a licensed loan officer since about 2004, I think December of 2004. I was actually working in a sales position in actually Northern California. I'm from Hawaii originally, but was in Northern California and kind of looking, you know, looking to move back to the islands. So I started making, phone calls to different companies out there, talked to a bunch of people. And then my wife at the time actually decided to, you know, we decided together that, you know, Hawaii is where we're going to go back to. So, you know, we did that. She was a paralegal at the time and went to work at an attorney's office. Just so happened, it was upstairs from a finance company. So she knew, of course, I was, looking to get back into the business. Walked in there, gave the manager my resume. He called me. We had a really good conversation, and about a week later, I was back in Hilo working on getting my mortgage license. And that was it, yeah.
Wow.
So I've been doing it ever since.
What were you doing before? Just kind of getting some background on that.
Yeah, so I was a regional manager for a rent-to-own company, a large rent-to-own chain. So I oversaw the Northern California area. So kind of the Northern Sacramento area mainly, and then kind of Roseville, Rockland, and those areas there. I did that for about close to 10 years, yeah.
The rent, did it work out well with the large change, huh? They just converted it over. There's so many different, that's good. It's really good.
Yeah.
Did you have to have a real estate license to do that, or you were running it, overseeing it?
I was overseeing it, so I wasn't licensed doing that at all, no. I just kind of managed it for the company.
That's great. You have a long background in an industry, so you've seen many, many changes. When 2004, did you have to get, remember when they started licensing the mortgage brokers a little bit differently? I don't know if that, like...
That did apply to me. So in 2004, really all I had to do was send the state of Hawaii a check for $100, fill out an application,
right.
And my license came in the mail about 2 weeks later. That was the process. You know, that was, of course, there was a lot of in-house training to, you know, to understand the processes and whatnot. But as far as regulation, there really wasn't any. It was almost non-existent. I think it was
That's funny.
2010 when they changed that, and we had to go through what's called NMLS, so the National Mortgage Licensing Services. And then they actually have you go through similar to realtors, right? Continued education, initial education, and then annual recertification. And then it's a federal and state level license now. So you not only have to have the federal license, but you have to be licensed in every state that you're going to originate in. So that was about 2010.
I guess the Dodd-Frank came in and they started making all those changes, huh? Like, was that a 2000, after that? Yeah.
Yeah, they started in 08, and then you actually, the license, you know, it took them a while to figure out what they wanted to do. But in 2010, the people that had those, you know, those $100 mail-in licenses had to go through the training and whatnot. Yeah, so no matter how long you've been doing it, you started from day one, went through it was a 20-hour course, and then an 8-hour continued education annually. Yeah.
And your real experience comes from real world, you know, real life experience, really, on these those transactions, digging in and doing them. Commercial, you can still do commercial without a regular license, right? Some commercial?
That is correct, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So, there's qualified mortgages, right? So, the NMLS oversees the qualified mortgages. So, your conventional loans, your government loans, things like that. There are things outside of that you can originate without a license. They have rules there where, you know, you can only do so many per year. I don't have those numbers, but, you know, you're limited
in
transaction.
Right.
But, yeah, there are many, many cases where you can originate without a license if it falls out of that qualified mortgage umbrella.
You know what it gets me, tells me, like, when you think about it, there's so, you know what they always say, like, with law and courts and everything, they say ignorance is no excuse, right? So you hear these situations where people get in trouble, and they're like, no, I thought that was legal, right? I thought it was okay to do that. So I guess on the mortgage loan, you can just call what the commissions, each state commission or whatever, to find out what it is.
Yeah, so there are federal mandates, and then there's a Department of Financial Institutions in every state that kind of oversees and sets forth the requirements to originate in that state. So that's going to vary, right, from state to state. So right now I'm just licensed in the state of Hawaii, but on my team we have licenses in Michigan, Washington State, and California.
Oh, good. Michigan, Washington, and California. Oh, good. That's and then can you refer out to other brokers in other states? If you can't do
it. So my the company I work for, Nations Lending, we joined them actually August 1st makes 1 year since we've been with them. They're pretty much nationwide. So yeah, thank you. We have someone in every state. So yeah, we have a way where we can, you know, I mean, if I have a client, a longtime client that's looking to buy something somewhere else,
you
can
help.
Definitely put them in touch. Yeah, and it's easier, right? Because if it's my existing client, I kind of pass over the information. And it's not like they're starting from scratch, right? They're the person that's going to help them understand what situation.
Len, it's so much easier, you know, people do business with people they know, like, and trust, right? So when you're able to still help or give a referral, it means a lot, especially today. You know, I'm old school. You're more old school because we've been in a long time. And today, I think... you know, with the internet, which is wonderful. I mean, we can do things. We can work virtually. You can do so much more that you couldn't do 25 years ago. But it's scary sometimes. You know, who is this company? What are they doing? You know, you can't just go off the ad.
Right.
So those referrals are huge. You know, we have a referral network in 50 states. Everybody's with their own company. They're not under our company, right? You know, the other people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And But it's nice. We built relationships for years, and then we have a certification and things they go through so that we know they know what they're doing. And then, you know, there's P's and Q's. So I just think it's nice in today's world, you know, where they can say, hey, Len, who are you going to use in Florida? Who are you going to use over here, you know?
Right.
Or I get called in just sometimes to oversee a project or help with a problem if something hasn't sold, you know, or developments, without, you know, there's so many, anything related to the real estate. And I only have a license in Maryland and Hawaii, so I can't do anything like write the contract or do anything in that situation, but I can advise, I can talk to them about what marketing, what the problems are, what I see. And so you could do the same thing, right, with helping people.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So these people that I'm referring out, right, when I'm not licensed in those states, I mean, they're people that I have relationships with already. So I'm even though I'm not the person that's licensed in the transaction anymore, I'm still involved step by step in helping where I can. You know, where the things that you can do without a license, right? I'm involved in that process for sure. So yeah, getting a handoff or referral like that is the way to go. You know, yeah, for sure.
It really helps in so many ways, especially because, you know, our rates went up, what, 9 times in a year? I think it's 9 or 10. I know I'm following, but I think that really scared a lot of people. You go from 2 to 3%, and then all of a sudden you're up at, you know, 7 and 8%. You know, you really have to know what you're doing to be able to advise the people to get in. So what do you think about buying down the rate right now? Because I think, like, the buy-down seemed to be a way to go if you're going to want to stay in the property for a while. What's your opinion on that? And how does it work? I know how it works, but I want you to tell our people.
Sure. Yeah. So there's two different methods, right? There's a temporary buy down, which is kind of new and kind of it was created for this market, and then there's the permanent buy down, which was always existed, right? So and what those are. So the permanent buy down, I'll talk about that one since that always exists. That's basically, every time lenders have a rate sheet. And on that rate sheet, there might be 20 different options for the borrower. The rate that you should always quote as a lender is your par rate, right? Your rate without any additional costs, any additional upfront
costs.
With
any points? Without any extra points, you mean?
Yeah,
or?
There you go. Yeah, so points is that upfront cost I'm talking about. So we always start off at par. So par is that rate without any additional points.
Let's tell them what a point is. A point is 1% of the loan amount, just so they know.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah, 1 point is 1% of the loan amount. So if you want to, and I always share this with you, I'll let you know what the rate is without any points, and then we'll talk about in half-point increments. Here's what your rate would be in a half a point, 1 point, 2 points, so on and so forth. And I always coach them, then let them know, hey, I mean, with this additional one-point cost, it's going to save you, let's say, $50 a month. Well, that 1 point is going to cost you $2,000. So we do the math, right? $50 savings divided by the $2,000 cost, how many months is it going to take you to break even? And if you think you're going to hang on for that mortgage for at least that amount of time and you have the money up front, then a buy-down might be a good thing for you, right? But if this is a temporary loan or if it's something you're going to refinance down the road because maybe we think rates are going to be better next year, but your break-even is three years down the road, maybe the buy-down doesn't make sense. So it makes sense for the right person, right? So it just depends. I feel that if you can afford the payment today, think that the buy-down is not the best way to go because I feel that rates are going to be improving 6 months, a year, 2 years down the road. And typically when you buy down the rate, you have to have that loan for 3 to 4 years to break even, to get that money back. So if you bought down the rate and you're going to refinance when rates get better, you lost some of that money that you initially invested up front
the
rate.
But then but when you refi, you're going to have costs too, right? So you just kind of weigh it out with the whole picture.
So you have to weigh the, you have to weigh the cost. So, I mean, and that's if you're working, we talked about us being doing this for a long time, right? I mean, so the people that if your lender's not talking to you and doing the math with you and finding out what your break even is, including the cost of that refinance, then, I advise everyone to ask those questions. When talking about a buy down, talk about that break even point for sure.
I think it's so important is because we all kind of are not just consultants, but coaches for people. you know, when we really mm-hmm. have the expertise and we care, like you said, you're finding out, you know, are they going to be in it for a long time or is it a short period plan?
Right.
That makes a lot of sense, you know, because they
right.
may not think about the different options. So the permanent,
right.
with a permanent buy down now, are there restrictions? Because we're talking about, there's so many different loans. I mean, we could, you know, out there, and many times, you know, we hear, depending on the down payment. I'm gonna throw this out here and then let you do the expertise on where we should cut this question up, right? Because
sure.
you
sure.
and I both know there's so many loans, and we've got conventional, we've got FHA, you know,
right.
VA, we've got, you know, we've got jumbo loans, which is a whole nother conversation. But so
mm-hmm,
if
mm-hmm.
somebody is going to buy down, or they don't, but think about buy down, is there a limit on what, how many points they can pay or the seller can pay depending on their down payment? And with that, that's why I'm asking a general, but you'll dice it up
yeah.
the way it needs to be because, you know.
Yeah, so great question. So on the permanent buy down, right, we talked about the permanent and the temporary buy down. So on the permanent buy down, the buyer can pay, you know, as many points as they want, up to five. So they can buy down if they wanted up to 5 points out of their own pocket. On the temporary
okay.
buy down, so that's the other option. That one, the temporary buy down, is where it gives you a temporary lower rate for the first, second, and sometimes third year. So some lenders have a 3-year temporary buy down, some have a 2, some have a 1 year. You know, and if a lender has a 3, you can still choose 2 or 1 or whatever. On that,
so it's like 3-2-1
temporary buy down.
3-2-1.
Yeah, 3-2-1.
Okay.
There you go. On that temporary buy down, none of the funds can come out of the buyer's pocket. 100% of it has to be from the seller.
That's
in the form
fair.
Of a seller concession. I know. So that's where it gets a little bit challenging. So if you know that it's something you need, right? I mean, you know, and that's mm-hmm. another reason why, you know, why it's good as a buyer to work with a lender realtor combination
right.
that have, you know, they talk and they talk a lot and they work together often, because they can have, your lender and your realtor can have those conversations up front to know what you need to help you better qualify for
mm-hmm.
a loan. So right, if you and I
that is so important.
Putting together an
yeah.
offer for a buyer, I
right.
always tell my buyer agents, hey Natalie, you know, in this situation, when we submit an offer, we have to ask for some kind of concessions, because we need this rate to make this work, and without concessions,
because of what
they
qualify
for, to make this work. Exactly.
Okay, so
exactly.
what they qualify for? Now, when you're saying there's okay on a 3-2-1 buy down, they don't let any money come in from the buyer. In that sense, the buyer could pay. So, how much could the seller pay? 3%, 6%? It depends
yep.
on how much the buyer's putting down, or no.
So it does, yeah. So I can actually, I'll send you. I actually have a chart that I've created. Kind of like
Perfect.
A cheat sheet for realtors. But, yeah, so I'll go through the chart with you real quick. So on a VA loan, right, a government-backed VA loan, 0% down from the buyer, the seller can
mm-hmm.
give up to 4% of the purchase price, or actually the loan amount, not
okay.
purchase price, 4% of the loan amount in the form of a concession. That 4%
okay.
can be used to buy down the rate or to help pay for closing costs, either way. On a USD loan, which is also a government-backed zero-down loan, the seller can contribute up to 6% of the loan amount.
Wow.
On an FHA
okay.
loan, yeah, 6%.
Okay, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, on an FHA loan, which is also another government-backed loan that requires the buyer to put down 3.5%, the seller can contribute up to 6% of the loan amount. Towards,
oh, that's really good.
Or rate buy down. Yeah, yeah. And then,
really,
and then,
really
and then
good.
From there,
okay.
Yeah, and then from there we go into conventional loans, right?
Okay.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm following.
So on,
you. Just conventional.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, on conventional loans, we break it down from primary and second home, and then the amount of down payment. So the smallest concession is on investment properties. The seller can only contribute 2%. Of the purchase price on an investment transaction. So when you're buying an investment home, so a home that you're going to rent out, the seller can only contribute
uh-huh.
2%.
Even if you're putting a lot of money down?
Even, it doesn't matter. Down payment doesn't matter on an investment property.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
On a primary residence or second home, when you're putting down 25% or more, the seller can
okay.
contribute 9%.
And what is it, like 6% if you're putting down 5% or?
Yeah,
or
so when you're putting down 10 to 10 to 24% it's 6, and then anything less than that it's 3. Yeah.
It's 3, and this is unconventional.
Yeah.
Okay. So in that amount is going to include those points, like if you're trying to buy the rate down, that amount's going to include that or closing costs or anything you're asking the seller to pay, right?
Yeah, so those concessions can only be used for closing costs or points. So it can help if you can use it for any kind of closing costs, including points.
What about the prepaid taxes and insurance? Can it be on that too?
Yeah.
You know, in the closing costs, because they're considered closing costs. Okay,
yep.
and that would cover that as well. I'm surprised on that 3-2-1 that they don't allow the buyer to pay any of those points down. That's really, wow.
Yeah, so the rationale behind that is how the 3-2-1 works is you're going to get, you know, remember I talked about that rate at 0 points? You're going to get that rate. What the seller is doing is the seller is, so let's say you want to do just the one, right, to make this easy. You're just going to do a one-year buy-down. What the seller is doing is we take, let's say the going rate today is 7%, let's just say. Your temporary buy-down would get you your initial rate of 6% for 1 year. What the seller is doing, the seller is paying the difference in payment between the 7% and the 6% payment. So that's why the buyer's not allowed to do it, because it doesn't make sense, right? Because if you're going to contribute towards it, you might as well just keep your money and pay the higher amount. So that's what you're doing. The seller is paying the difference between one rate and the other. So that's why they don't allow the buyer to do it, because it just doesn't make sense when you think about it. You're kind of prepaying your monthly payment up front.
I hear what you're saying, but I don't see why it doesn't make sense. Maybe I'm just not wrapping my brain around it.
Because
if you wanted to, you would just do the permanent buy down. You wouldn't do a 3-2-1 then, right?
Exactly. That's why. There you go.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
See, you're going to think this is weird, because even in 2004, they said, when I got in the business in 85, we did not have buyer brokeraging. We didn't even have seller agency then. I think, like, for example, in Maryland, seller agency came out in October of 89. So we would, and I always want to keep up on the loans as much as possible, because to make suggestions, you know, sometimes people will bring offers on our listings and the agent may be new and doesn't really realize the buyer could go another way. You know what I mean? Like, there's all these different options that come up. And many people are trained these days, the agents and brokers, to stay out of it totally, to stay out of that, have the lender pre-approve, which because of privacy issues and now with licensing, of course, we're not getting into the mortgage loan as far as the licensing side, but I come from the old school where we had to know all this stuff. And would you believe, though, that literally when you would get offers in the 80s and 90s, the buyers would fill out a financial information sheet, which was presented to the listing agent and the seller, which showed how much money they made, how much money were in their bank accounts, their other – I mean, it was like – nowadays, people would freak out. Because as a listing agent, we want to touch base with the lender, you know, once a week, not being annoying and not being a pain, to see how it's going.
Oh.
And nowadays, people say, no, just call the buyer's agent. Don't call us. It's like, wait a minute, we don't want you to have five phone calls from five people, but just to do our job, right? And it's such a different world now that you really, really have to make sure the lender's like you and knows everything that they're doing, you know, because you're not always getting to. Yeah, it's a different, totally different world. It used to work back then, though. Nobody got mad, but I guess it changed over the time that everybody's business is their own personal business, you know.
Right. So I get I try to direct everyone that works with me, so every buyer that works with me, to my website to do an application online. And one of the questions we ask when they fill out the application is it okay for us to share your information with your realtor? And we ask that because I think it's important, right? So that if you allow me to share information with your realtor and I can work to, you know, the realtor is responsible for submitting the offer, but from a financial and qualification standpoint, I can help them out and give them information that I think is valuable when submitting an offer. So
totally.
We always encourage that for sure. For sure.
And the listing agent's calling.
I was going to say, listen, I encourage that as well. I mean, because that allows me to, you know, sell the buyer even more. I'm like, no, this guy's solid. And, I mean, you know, if you accept this, we're good.
It's tough to be on your side and have everybody calling you everywhere. You need one person, you know, so that you're not getting, you know,
sure.
five times the amount of calls because everybody's calling separately. But there is that level of that. And even with listing agents, you know, we've always been doing listings forever and ever and ever. Buyers, too. But, I mean, listings always are the name of the game when you're an agent or broker
sure.
in you know, the whole thing. I'm just talking. We have a lot of agents and brokers that listen in. You know, to do your job and to represent the seller, we need to know, but we aren't going to know what you know, Len. We're not going to know their exact income and how much money
right.
they have here or there. We just need to know, you know, the general questions that it's a difficult thing. One of the things we'd like to ask a lot is to please order the home appraisal right away. Instead of waiting
yeah.
for the home inspection period to be over, like, for example, maybe they ask for a 15-day J-1, you know, we call it in Hawaii, but for a home inspection, and
yeah.
they want to close in 30 days, but the appraisal is going to take the longest amount of time, right? So we try to do that and maybe work it in the offer if people are funny about it, maybe split the cost or, you know, credit them back some of it or something if it's not going to work, but... there's so many little, in Hawaii we call them pukas, right? But there's so many little intricacies
sure.
that make a deal work, and it's beautiful, but if they're not looked at, it just can fall apart, right? You know,
right.
you know, being a lender, like, you know, with you being a lender, I mean, we've seen some things later, it's like, wait a minute, that there's no way that could work, you know? If you know,
right.
so I think
right.
it's really important for people listening, if their buyers and sellers are listening, not a lot of agents and brokers are aware of it, to really make sure you know. Because a lot of people, we hear this a lot too, and tell me if you hear this, and we have our membership, so we're putting our pulse on different places in the country, and somebody will say, and I've talked to lenders in other areas, and I'll go, I had this deal. We were ready to close. And then their bank, their local bank, you know, not went ahead and I had something on the Big Island with somebody 3-4 months ago that I know in the business, and they were ready to close, and it was a $1.5 million loan, but the buyer's bank that they worked with in California said, hey, we'll give you a much better deal, and they lowered the rate a couple points and took it over. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know, that's kind of tough, right? Kind of tough
yeah,
in this market
yeah.
when you're up against this, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. There. I mean, for the most part, everyone's working off of the same rate sheet. You just kind of decide how much profit you want
right.
to make as a lender, right? So
okay.
there are some times where you know lenders decide, you know, we're going to take a loss on this one just to get the business and hope we get to break into a market
no.
a future business. But for the most
right.
part, everyone's working off of the same rate sheet. The difference in rate is how much profit you want to make. So if you're
okay.
if you're hearing a higher rate from one lender, it's probably because their margins are a little bit higher, right? So that's normally what it
okay.
is. And when you're getting something a lot lower, it's because they're willing to take a loss on that deal. That's normally what it is.
Okay, because there's somebody. Let me ask you this: if somebody is going qualifies FHA or conventional. You know, many
mm-hmm.
times with FHA or VA, you know, the ratios are such that you have to put them in the FHA because they might not qualify
right.
for conventional. If they do qualify
right.
for both, do you suggest that they go conventional to avoid the insurance?
Yeah, I think conventional is always the way to go if you qualify, right? I mean, if you qualify
okay.
for conventional, I 100% recommend it. And you said it, right? So with the government loan, so specifically the FHA and the USDA loan, you have the PMI. So PMI is mortgage insurance that protects the lender, not you, right, in case of default. That
right.
insurance is there for the life of the loan. The only way to get rid of that insurance is to refinance the loan. So 100%, if you can qualify for conventional, that's the way to go. But unfortunately, in this market, I mean, you know, property values, believe it or not,
right.
they're still pretty strong here. And property values are outpacing income. So, and what I mean by
right.
that is, you know, we can, on a conventional loan, you know, your debt to income ratio, right? So your monthly debt, including your new mortgage payment versus your gross monthly income, that ratio on a conventional loan tops out at 50%. That doesn't mean the max is 50% for everybody, but it tops out there for your top tier borrowers. On government loans, we're able to go to 55 and even 60% sometimes. So because the income is not as high as the purchase prices or the property values, we're having to go the government route, or specifically FHA, because we have a debt to income ratio that exceeds the 50% threshold.
Wow. No, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
That really makes a lot of sense that you have to do that. You know, in the old days, they've changed it a couple times with FHA where you didn't have to get the PMI down and all without refinance. But now it's back to, it's been for quite a long time, you have to refinance that loan to be able to get rid of that.
Yeah, I mean, so early on when I was, when I first started, it was, I can't even remember because it's been so long, but yeah, it would fall off eventually. Not anymore. Now it's there for the life of the loan.
Wow.
Yeah, right.
It's for life alone. And I remember years ago we could do FHA and VA assumables. Now you can still do an assumable, I think, on a VA, but you have to be a veteran, and take that and qualify.
Yeah.
Or can you do it if you don't qualify? You have to qualify all across the board.
You have to qualify. Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a question.
You qualify
for you
with the existing servicer. Yeah.
Okay. I have a question for you, just so I don't forget, because we. And this is just comes from years and years and years of being in the business. There was a time where the rules just didn't change every week. They were like once a year, twice a year, type of thing. Now I guess it's because of all the changes in the environment and everything. I'm hearing sometimes that the rules are changing. Sometimes lenders are making their new rules like ongoing basis.
Right.
I mean, can you let us know a little bit about that, because it makes it very confusing. I don't know. I'm kind of an analytical person, and I like to know. And I'll know the question to ask because I've been in so long. And I'm like, what about this or this?
Yeah.
But it's changed so much. So can you kind of tell us a little bit about why and what's happening and how do you decipher that? Because
maybe the rates aren't changing
as much, but that is.
Yeah, so the lenders and the agencies, right? So the agencies meaning Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, I mean, they're trying to forecast the market, right? So they kind of have rules in place based on where they think the market's going to go. But this market's so unpredictable right now that you quickly realize, wow, things aren't getting better as quickly as we thought, or they're getting worse, right? So these changes are made for that. But I would say the majority of the changes are lender overlays. So what a lender overlay is, sorry, I talked about the agency, right? So Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, they have their rules. So if you want to originate a loan and have it, and have it qualified for Fannie, Freddie Mac, here's the things you have to underwrite by. You have to meet these minimum thresholds. An overlay is the lender saying, all right, we're going to take that and we're going to add this and this and this to it. So a lot of lenders, because of risk, they're adding additional guidelines on top of that. So, that typically when you're working with a direct lender, right, so a lender that sells directly to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, typically you have very little to no overlays. The overlays come a lot, when it's, sometimes it's lenders that aren't selling direct, so people that portfolio, right? So local banks, the ability to not only lend direct, but I have the ability to broker as well. And I won't name the bank, but there's a local bank that I can broker to, and I swear every week I'm seeing we've made changes to this program. It's because it's a portfolio loan that they're going to keep in house, and they're and their tolerance for risk is shortening, right? They're not their appetite for risk is declining based on their based on what the market's doing. They thought the market was going to get better sooner, and it's not. So they're tightening their guidelines. But normally those changes are with lenders that are kind of keeping their loans in house for a while. Portfolio.
Okay, so that's probably
those are where you're seeing the biggest changes.
Okay, because I think when we had the meltdown after 2008. We saw so many changes, and then Dodd-Frank came in. And personally, as an old-timer, I think Dodd-Frank was a little too stringent, like way too stringent.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the rules seemed to be getting made by people that really didn't know the industry. They were government-related.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not being negative, but I lived through it.
Sure.
And I thought some of this is a little much. And you're always trying to protect the consumer, but there were a lot of consumers that were doing these on their own, you know, wanting to write, like, loans.
Right.
That, I mean, saying they made more than they made and doing things that they shouldn't be doing. And so unfortunately, a lot of risk, like you mentioned, and also liability, more liability, and possible big fines got pushed over on lenders. So do you think some of that has to do with it, too, because...
Oh, yeah, especially early on, right? So early on, I mean, we went, I mean, everyone, I think everyone will admit, we went from, I mean, we were totally underregulated prior to Dodd-Frank. I mean, you know, it was, you know, people were doing almost whatever they wanted. So when, but the problem is when the regulations came on, we went from being underregulated to like way overregulated. And then slowly it got a little bit better, And then COVID happened, and then so they tightened up a little bit. But then they realized, well, COVID's not, you know, the market's not slowing, so they opened it up a little bit. And then now we're dealing with this, so they're tightening again. But so I would say the biggest change that we've seen recently that is across the board, an agency change, is for people trying to purchase a second or investment property. So the agency, this happened, I don't know, 2 or 3 months ago. They basically made it harder or more expensive to get a second home or investment home. You know, prior to this year, you could get a second home at almost the exact same rate as a primary residence. Now, a second home, on average, I'm not looking at the actual cost right now. I'm just going off of loose memory. A second home might cost you two points more than a primary.
Right.
And an investment might cost you 4 points more than a primary.
Right.
So they're making it more expensive and harder to get because, they feel that if something happens, what are you going to let go first,
really
a second
crazy
home or investment home? Yeah, yeah.
No, it's very true. And you get, you know, people on the islands, like, you know, oh, buy 3, 4, 5 homes, right? You know, I mean, coming in from other areas.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
But it was October. I'm just trying to think. We're in 2023. It's COVID-20. But 22 or was it 21 in April, they made some big changes on some of the other second homes too, like across the board for Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, I think. It was,
It's been in place for a little while. I think it was either they announced it the end of last year, but then it went into effect early this year, those additional costs.
Yeah. Same thing. It's talk about affordable housing. In Hawaii here, we have a big problem with affordable housing, right, which I'm not sure how they're going to structure all that. You know, you have some different properties people can buy if they have the threshold of income is lower and get in on that. But,
I think one thing we don't have and we need here in Hawaii is a, you know, well, they have them on the other islands and the other counties. Hawaii County doesn't have a publicly funded down payment assistance program. A lot of people are able to qualify based on their income. Right? They have the income to afford the debt of the new home. They don't have the down payment though, and there's limited there's no public assistance, and there's limited private or federal assistance. So it makes it tough.
Oh my goodness, yeah. It's I had a client call me in the last few days, like, I want to buy one of those. And I'm like, you can't. You make way too much money. But I'm a senior now.
Yeah.
I don't show that much. And I'm like, believe me, you don't want to do something like that when you have all these other properties. You'll get in trouble, you know. It's just an interesting world we're in. I mean, I don't know. I my hat's off to you because I think – there's so much to know in your business now because you certainly don't want to do a loan and then find out it's not approved at the end because it's some, we call them pukas in Hawaii, but something that came up, you know, that it's very different. But so what do you think about the no doc loans? Are they coming back or is that just in different states?
Yeah. So I have mixed feelings on them. I think they're, they are coming back. Mixed feelings. I think it's you got to be responsible with those, right? So you know there is a program that I actually use frequently, and it makes sense. So a lot of, especially Hawaii County, right? So there's a lot of, you talked about a lot of people from the states moving to Hawaii, and they're coming to Hawaii County because Hawaii County, I think, is probably the last affordable place to buy and live. You know, you can in Paradise Park, you can still get, you can get Hawaiian Paradise Park, a huge subdivision on the Hilo side. You can get a 1 acre lot, a nearly 2,000 square foot home for $500,000-$600,000. I mean, there's
we have some listings in there right now.
That.
We have some in HPP right now. That one in particular is 588. Yep, and it's same on an acre.
There you go.
But
Can't do that anywhere else.
No, you're right. You're right.
So,
it's funny. Hawaii HPP has over 5,000 lots in there. You know, but those prices it amazes me for that right there have gone up quite considerably. I mean, in the last
five years, they have.
You could still get a lot for $30,000. In 2018, you could get a lot for 30, and now that same lot's going for closer to 100. You know, it's just a different. Interesting. Well, now this is – so tell me, why don't you like the no-doc loans? If somebody – for example, if the person has their own business and they really are making the money and they have a lot of deductions, I don't think they're good for somebody that, you know, is not going to – is going to say they can afford it and they really can't afford it, right? But what do you like about them?
So you just got – I think you just got to be responsible with them, right? So, I mean, that's it. I mean, so the example I was going to give was a lot of people are selling their homes in the States. And you know, they got some cash on them, significant amount of cash on them. And, you know, some people are able to work remotely because, you know, that started during COVID and move to Hawaii, buy a home, easy, no problem, right? I can qualify you based on your current income. But some people, they sell their house, they got $500,000 in the bank now, and they want to move to Hawaii and then find a new job, but they want to take their time and do that. So, so there's a no-doc program that will allow these people to buy a home with 25% down as long as they have 12 months of reserves in the bank. So you have to be able to service the mortgage for 12 months consecutively. I think that makes sense for the people that are selling. They have a lot of money in the bank moving here. They don't want to rent first. They want to buy now. And then take your time and find that new job, right? I think that's fine. It's just where it doesn't make sense is when you're using a no-doc loan to buy house number 2, 3, 4, 5, and then we have a repeat of 2008. So that's where I think if we're responsible with it, it's fine. It's when we're not. Yeah, that's all. Yeah.
Now on the no-doc loan, is it a true no-doc? Let's just go a little bit about no-doc loans. There's bank statements only. There's no doc. There's no income tax returns. There's several different ways to get a no doc.
Yeah, I think no doc is probably not the right term. I would say no income doc, right? So you can do the loan I'm mentioning. There is zero income documents required, so we don't have to verify your income at all. However, we still have to get documents to verify your liquid assets, to make sure you have the down payment, and to make sure you have the reserve funds to service the loan while you're looking for that new job. So that's that one. And then there is – so that's the probably the one that is the most extreme, right? You're not verifying income at all. And then from there you have –
What about credit?
Correct. Yeah, we're going to analyze your credit as well. So there is a minimum credit score for those no income document loans as well. So there is no loan that I'm aware of right now where you don't have to have a credit report. I think the best case is no income documentation.
Right, I guess unless it's hard money, and then you're going to pay out the nose for the interest rate, right? Which even then they probably want your credit.
Yeah, exactly.
Gosh.
Yeah, and so I gave you the example of the no income documentation loan on a primary residence. I think the popular one right now though is on an investment property. So that's the DSCR or debt service coverage ratio. I really like this loan. So this is a really good loan for people that want to buy an investment property that they're going to put someone in and that person's going to rent it out. So the guideline on that one is we don't have to qualify you based on your income as long as the home can service itself, meaning the rent for the home can cover the mortgage. So if your mortgage payment is $2,000 and your rent...
Okay.
Go ahead. No,
I didn't want to cut you off. I'm sorry. How much do you have to put down on that one?
So that one is minimum 20, but a lot of times in Hawaii, you got to put down more to bring the coverage in line, right? So if you put down only 20% and your mortgage payment is $2,200, but your rent's only $2,000, you got to put down more to bring that mortgage payment down to where the rent's going to cover it.
That is a good program.
I love that program. Yeah, I use it all the time.
Do you have to do you have to have the full, like, a renter, though, in place? Like, do you have to have a submit a year lease, or they just know you're going to rent it?
Yeah, they just know you're going to rent it. So what, how the rent is determined is when the appraiser goes out there, he not only gives us the value of the home, he gives us the fair market rental value. So we use that number as our baseline. So that number that
That's
he gives
great.
Us, your mortgage payment can exceed that, yeah.
That's really good. So then, yeah. Oh, that's really good. And that, and you're doing that in Hawaii and the other states you're into?
Yeah, sure. that's out everywhere now. Yeah, yeah. I've been doing them for about the past. It came out about a year ago, and just so everyone knows, there are debt service coverage ratios where the rent can be less than the mortgage. So, but you're going to get your best interest rate and your best deal at 100% coverage. So 100% coverage means 2,000
gotcha.
Rent, 2,000 mortgage. If your rent's only 1,800, your mortgage is 2,000. You can still do it, but now it's not 100% coverage no more. You're at 90 or 80%. So it can still be done, but it's a higher risk loan to the lender now, so they're going to charge you more for
right.
it.
Right. Okay. Well, you're good at this. You're great. Well, this has been very enlightening, I think, for everybody, talking about just the different, you know, there's so many options, and that's why you really need to talk to you as an expert to find out what they're doing
yeah.
and not just assume. You know, I mean, some people go online and they just jump into something, and it's not, I know a lot of the companies online are saying, okay, we'll throw in a mortgage appraisal fee, or we'll throw this in, and they get locked in, even though, you know, they can, without really having a great conversation.
Well, we talked earlier, yeah. right? We started this, I think one of the first things we talked about was referral, right? And I think the thing about that is, I mean, you know, you're getting someone that someone else that you trust is recommending, right? And
right.
I'm not going to refer. I don't refer just anybody. I only refer people
right.
I trust that are going to do a good job. So I think a referral is the best way to go when you're looking for a mortgage. Talk to your realtor.
I agree.
Talk to your friends that live in the area, and work with someone that you know that someone else has worked with before. Because there's lenders out there, and I don't want to get too negative, but you know, someone will apply for a loan with me, and you know, when they apply for a loan, a lot of times we do a credit report, a credit check. There are that information's public, right? Your mm-hmm. phone number, your email address, and the fact that you pulled your credit for a mortgage, that's public information. There's lenders out there that actually buy that information, and then you start. That's how you get start
right.
getting all these spam calls from. And I mean, I don't know if you're buying information like
right.
that. I mean, you know, how good are you at your? Yeah, yeah. So that's just my thing.
Well,
on that.
You know,
so, I mean,
it's yeah. they also your own mortgage. You know, whoever you know, the loans get sold right
yeah.
constantly, right? It's not
yeah.
very rare
yeah.
you see them
yeah.
in house, but there are. I mean, you know,
yeah.
ones some that are in house. So, for example, you have your mortgage company maybe put your house on the market. They're contacting
mm-hmm.
you, that direct mortgage company, because they're buying those too, right? They're saying,
yeah.
hey, you bought your house on the market.
Right.
Do you want to use us, you know? And
it's
yeah. just
yeah.
The analytical tools out there right now. So you're right. You get the spots and the spot bots and all that.
Yeah.
You get so much information. You have to be so
yeah.
careful. And scammers and
yeah.
everything. This has been so enlightening, and I want to get you back some more too and do some more business, because I think you definitely know who to refer and what to do and which program is best for the people. And that makes all the difference in the world. And we only have a few minutes left. This always flies by. And I don't know why my cell went off. I had to turn down. There's something with the Androids. Even when you turn it down, it still pops back up for some reason. I'm going to have to start turning my cell off completely. These phones are coming alive, I'll tell you. Technology is so funny these days. But yeah, so is there anything else you'd like to? Can you give your contact information? Anybody can always contact us at realtyuniversal.com, and we'll give it to you as well. But if you could give your website and contact, et cetera. And then is it okay with you if anybody wants to ask for a copy of the differences that you gave for them to email
yeah.
or call a copy? That'd be great.
For sure. I'll send them to you too, so you have them as well. Yeah, but yeah, for sure, you can reach
Perfect.
Out to me, and I'd be happy to get that to you. Yeah, and these aren't you know my internal guidelines. This is Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac guidelines, so they're the same everywhere. So
Perfect.
Yeah, I'd be happy to share that with you. Yeah, so again, my name is Len Pagan. I am the area manager for Nations Lending. So I oversee the entire island of Hawaii. The best way to get a hold of me is my cell phone. That number is 808-275-6898. And then my email address is my name, so len.pagan@nationslending.com.
Perfect. That's excellent. Yeah, and you're all over the islands and also in the other states and can refer out. That's great.
Correct.
That's
for sure.
Yeah. Maui seems to be, I mean, Maui's picking up. Oahu's pretty busy, you know. Yeah. It's hard to say. We don't have a crystal ball what's going to happen in the next year or two. But it's still always a good time to buy, I think, don't you?
I totally believe that. And I think, I mean, this is kind of, you know, it might sound a little cliche, but I mean, I think, they say, you know, marry the home, not the rate, right? I mean, what that means is, I mean, if you see a home that you like right now, I think the prices right now are probably the best you're going to get it at, especially on Hawaii Island where there's limited inventory and there's limited space, right? I mean, you can only put up so many homes on an island. So, I mean, I don't see prices going backwards, maybe slightly, but not much. So I think that if you can afford the monthly payment, you might not love it, but if you can afford the monthly payment and you love the home, now is a great time because rates are going to go down. We don't know when, but they are going to go down. And when they do go down, what happens? All these people that are waiting are going to stop buying. So there's going to be more demand.
Right.
Price goes up. So yeah, I mean, marry the home, but not the rate. That's the advice I give people.
That's a good point, you know, because your home is where your heart is if it's your main home and you want to really enjoy it too. That sounds great. Well, it has been a pleasure to have you on here. And I hope I didn't ask you too many questions. Being in this so long, my brain's going, what about this? What about this? So, I know there's still loans we didn't even talk about or ways to do it, right? With co-signers and gift monies. Oh, one quick question, though, I do have. When there was a time where gift money had to be from a relative or, you know, very close to you, is it some of those have changed now, right, where you could get gift money from other places or?
Yeah, they've loosened it up. I mean, so they really wanted to see, you know, a close relative. They've loosened it up to close personal friends now. And really, I mean, you know, how do you verify you're someone's close personal friend, right?
Right.
So
it has
been loosened quite a bit. That's again, that's the agency guideline, right? They've loosened it up, but every lender is going to be different.
Okay.
I mean, gift funds can come from a relative or close personal friend is how the guideline is worded.
Okay. I just want to put it out there for anybody listening that thinks, oh, I'll never buy a home. I have to rent forever, or I'm never going to do that. Don't think, you know, get on the phone with Len and, you know, reach out and see, because many times there's so many ways to work it out to where you can. So it's really important if that's a dream of yours to, and you haven't done it yet, to, you know, put that there and reach out. So... All right, well, this has been wonderful, and anything you want to, just one last thing you want to tell anybody other than we did really pretty much go over everything.
Yeah, no, that was great. Yeah, so I'll just piggyback off of the last thing you said. I mean, you know, applying is the key. Applying for a mortgage is the key. Don't be afraid of the inquiry in your credit report. It's not going to kill you. I mean, people, I think, worry about that too much. I mean, if you're not having your credit report pulled, you know, all the time, it's one inquiry here and there is not going to kill you. But the reward is way more valuable than that little thing on your credit. What you're going to get when you apply with a, you know, any good mortgage lender, right, that really cares, is they're going to sit down with you and they're going to go over everything with you. And they're going to let you know, here's what you qualify for. Here's, you know, here's how you should best get your offer in. Or even equally as important, here's why you don't qualify, and here's what you need to do to get qualified. You know, if it's credit related, we work with. I mean, there's all kinds of credit repair companies out there. I've been doing this for 20 years. After 20 years of doing this, or nearly 20 years, I finally found a reputable credit repair company that I've been working with for the last 2 or 3 years.
Wow.
I refer you to them.
You could shoot me that
they
too.
Work
That'd
with
be great because we don't. That's
100%. But yeah, I mean, yeah, don't be afraid to apply, even if you know you're not going to qualify. Don't be afraid to apply so that you
That's
can sit down and get your lender's professional opinion on what you need to do and what you need to work on first. You know, and sometimes, there's nothing you can do. Sometimes your credit's great and your income is not there yet, right? Because the market is, you know, the market's so far ahead of where your income is. I mean, we can tell you, all right, well, you know, in your current job, you're probably not going to be able to qualify. Here's the income based on today's market you need. And that at least maybe motivates you to get out of the job you're in now and find something where, you know, I mean, so,
exactly.
You know, the news ain't always great, but it's accurate news that's going to help you.
And you're taking those steps, whether they're baby steps or big steps. And, you know, you were in overseeing rent to own for a long time, right? And there's also a private, and we want them to do more, you know, but there's so many ways that something can come up. And it's interesting about life. When you start taking that step forward and you believe and have faith and you keep moving, lots of times lots of doors open up that would never have opened up if you just sit there and go, oh, I'm never ever going to be able to do this, right? And it's really interesting.
Right.
So it's and people like Len who care, and we care in our industry, make such a difference. And I think you guys can tell when you work with somebody who cares versus somebody who's just, you know, pushing you through. So awesome. Well, you have a great rest of your weekend, and I hope to talk to you soon. And to everybody out there, I wish you peace.
Thank you.
Thanks.